Good morning, everyone. So this is the third of five talks that we're doing about prophecy. And if you've not heard the others, I'd really encourage you to listen on the podcast, because almost you need to hear all of them to get the full picture. So some of the things I say today, you might find that you think, oh, I wish you'd talk a bit more about that. Well, it may well be that in a couple of weeks' time or next week, that that will be developed further. So as I say, it is the whole series. If your questions aren't answered at the end, come back and ask Paul. So today we're looking at prophecy in the New Testament, about how prophecy happened, really, through the New Testament times, and how we can apply that to ourselves. Unfortunately, the Bible wasn't written as a textbook, and therefore there's actually very little systematic teaching about how we, what prophecy is, how we deal with it. We get little bits here and there. The most comprehensive bit is 1 Corinthians 14, which does deal with prophecy. But as we found when we were reading 1 Corinthians, it wasn't written into a vacuum. It was written into the situation in which they were in. So actually what Paul is dealing here is the fact that the people in Corinth really liked spiritual gifts, but they particularly liked speaking in tongues. And so this passage is explaining how actually prophecy is much more important, because it's more valuable to everybody than speaking in tongues is. So I'm going to read part of 1 Corinthians 14 to start off. It's quite a long passage, and I will miss a few verses out, and then we will have a look at what it has to say to us. Follow the way of love and eagerly desire gifts of the Spirit, especially prophecy. For anyone who speaks in a tongue does not speak to people, but to God. Indeed, no one understands them. They utter mysteries by the Spirit. But the one who prophesies speaks to people for their strengthening, encouraging, and comfort. Anyone who speaks in a tongue edifies themselves, but the one who prophesies edifies the church. I would like every one of you to speak in tongues, but even more to prophesy. The one who prophesies is greater than the one who speaks in tongues, unless someone interprets, so that the church may be edified. Now, brothers and sisters, if I come to you and speak in tongues, what good will I be to you unless I bring you some revelation or knowledge or prophecy or word of instruction? And on to verse 9. Unless you speak intelligible words with your tongue, how will anyone know what you are saying? You will just be speaking into the air. Since you are eager for gifts of the Spirit, try to excel in those that build up the church. Jumping to verse 22. Tongues, then, are a sign not for believers, but for unbelievers. Prophecy, however, is not for unbelievers, but for believers. So if the whole church comes together and everyone speaks in tongues and inquirers or unbelievers come in, will they not say that you're out of your mind? But if an unbeliever or an inquirer comes in while everyone is prophesying, they are convicted of sin and are brought under judgment by all, as the secrets of their hearts are laid bare. So they will fall down and worship God, exclaiming, God is really among you. What then shall we say, brothers and sisters? When you come together, each of you has a hymn or a word of instruction, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Everything must be done so that the church may be built up. Two or three prophets should speak, and if others should weigh, and others should weigh carefully what is said. And if a revelation comes to someone who is sitting down, the first speaker should stop, for you can all prophesy in turn, so that everyone may be instructed and encouraged. The spirits of the prophets are subject to the control of the prophets. For God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, as in all the congregations of the Lord's people. And then verse 39, therefore, my brothers and sisters, be eager to prophesy and do not forbid speaking in tongues, but everything should be done in a fitting and orderly way. So one of the main things that we get from that chapter is the fact that it is a gift. The gift of prophecy is a gift that we should all desire. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, actually, I don't really want it. Hopefully, by the end, we will have looked at some of the things that I think perhaps stop us from desiring this gift, either desiring to receive it personally or to hear the words of prophecy from someone else. Prophecy is a gift of the Holy Spirit. That's really important. And it is a gift for everyone. Paul mentioned this last week when on Pentecost the fulfillment came of the Old Testament prophecy from Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. Prophecy isn't a gift for the specially holy or educated or people who have been Christians for many, many years. It's a gift for all of God's servants. Neither gender nor age matter. It's a gift to be desired by all people, all of us. That's me, that's you. If we do desire to prophesy, to hear from God on behalf of others, it really does prevent coming to church on a Sunday from being an activity in which I become a spectator or where I just come to receive myself, to one in which I expect also to hear from God on behalf of other people. And we've already had that this morning as Dan and Heather brought words to us that they believed God was putting on their hearts. That's what this is about. It's about us receiving, yes, but also receiving for other people. So that's the first point. Everyone, each one of us, should be desiring this gift. Secondly, this passage makes it clear that prophecy is about God speaking to people. It says that in verse 3. The purpose of prophecy is to give a message to people from God, either something that they didn't already know or something that they did know but had forgotten or needed to have reminded to them. In this way, it's very different from the gift of tongues. The gift of tongues is about us speaking to God. And it's really important, Paul says, for prophecy to be intelligible, for us to understand what's being said, for it not to be in a sort of language that doesn't make sense, which is true of tongues because that's a different language, and it's to bring a revelation from God. Prophecy is there to strengthen, to encourage, to comfort, to edify, and to instruct. This can't be stressed enough. It is so important that Paul mentions it many times in this chapter. I've put the verses up there. Since the passage that we've got here is about corporate worship, it's about the situation that we're in on a Sunday morning. It's about God bringing a word to the whole congregation. But that word might speak to everybody, or it might speak particularly to one or two individuals among the congregation. There are other contexts in which somebody might give a word of prophecy to an individual on very much more an individual basis, privately. But if it's genuinely a word of prophecy from God, it must always strengthen, encourage, comfort, edify, and instruct. In the previous chapter of Corinthians, Paul's spoken of the futility of prophecy if it's also not given in love, and then, of course, defines what love is. Prophecy must be spoken in love. If it doesn't strengthen, encourage, comfort, edify, and instruct within that sort of love, it isn't authentic. And because it builds up the church as a whole and individuals, Paul argues it is among the most important, the greatest gifts given by God to the church, which again is why we should eagerly desire it. I think sometimes we're a bit concerned about prophecy because we think that it might be that we're going to be told off by God within prophecy, if you know what I mean. That it's that sort of harsh word that we sometimes associate with the Old Testament prophets, which is actually not fair on them. But Paul says in this chapter that it does bring a conviction of sin. He says they, that's the unbelievers, are convicted of sin and are brought under judgment by all, as the secrets of their hearts are laid bare. So they will fall down and worship God. So this conviction of sin comes to those who come in who are unbelievers, because there's something in that prophecy that convinces them that they're living outside of God's loving forgiveness and grace. It causes them to repent and, importantly, to worship God. Now, what they hear might be exactly the same as the message which may strengthen, encourage, comfort, edify, and instruct all the Christians present. Because even a prophecy as simple as, I believe God is telling us that he loves us unconditionally, can convince an unbeliever that their life needs to turn around, and at the same time prove a challenge to Christians, perhaps to draw us back to God or closer to God. And so in that sense, act as a word of judgment. And I think sometimes we look at that phrase, the secrets of their hearts are laid bare, and we tremble. But I think generally, in fact, I think it would be very unlikely that somebody would stand up in a service like this and name somebody and then mention their specific sin. I don't think that's what it's about. But what does happen is when someone speaks what might sound quite a general word to many people, it can speak deep into somebody else's heart. It can really bring that knowledge that perhaps we're living outside of God's purposes at the moment. But don't worry about that phrase, because as I say, I don't think it's about you being bashed over the head by God in any sense. The whole point of prophecy is to build us up and to cause us to worship God, not to destroy us. If you read the whole passage, that bit is a bit confusing, because one point he's talking about prophecies and tongues are for believers and then for unbelievers. It is a complicated passage, but what I think is clear is that prophecy is that gift which is given both for unbelievers and for believers, because God speaks to all people through it. Back in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul asked the question, are all prophets? And I think this is something that we do ask ourselves. Well, if you prophesy, does that make you a prophet? It seems in the early church that there were some people who were called prophets, but they were only called prophets because they prophesied. So it's not an office in a sense like being a pastor or a teacher is. It's a function. You can't go and learn to be a prophet. You can learn about prophecy, But you can't go, there's no sort of degree course in being a prophet. And you can't go up to a prophet and demand a prophecy. So if there's somebody in this room who you think, well, that person is a prophet, because it's somebody who regularly prophesies, they regularly give prophecies from God, I'll go and ask them. You can't demand a prophecy. It's not like the poor old poet laureate who used to have to write a poem every time there was a royal occasion. Prophecy is spontaneous. It's revealed and inspired by God, and it speaks into a current situation. So it's not something you can prepare in advance as you can prepare a sermon. There clearly were, as I say, prophets in the Old Testament, because we get lists of them, such as in Ephesians 4, Christ gave himself apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and the teachers. But as I said, there's no record of them being prophets being appointed in the same way as pastors and teachers were. They were simply the people who were recognized as people who regularly brought prophecies from God. So we may think of people within this church who, in those terms, are prophets to this church. And generally, the prophets were prophets to a particular church. There were a few who seemed to wander around giving prophecies, but mostly they were connected with churches. Now, as I say, there are things which do worry quite a lot of us, or worry me anyway, and I'm assuming other people join me here, about prophecy. If I ask for the gift of prophecy, what if I get it wrong? And in this passage, we're told that others should weigh carefully what's said, decide whether it is from God. And actually, sometimes I think that thought of somebody weighing it up worries us even more, worries me even more. Well, is somebody going to then stand up and say, no, that's not right, that's not from God? Again, I don't think that's what this is about. This is about guidelines. It's about a safety net for us all. And actually, I think if we keep to those guidelines of strengthening, encouraging, comforting, edifying, and instructing in love, even if what you say to somebody or say in front of the church is actually caused by your dodgy curry rather than God's voice, it doesn't matter because you've not hurt anybody. But when we hear a prophecy, we are told we should weigh it up, both in this passage and in 1 Thessalonians. Do not treat prophecies with contempt, but test them all. We might get it wrong because while a prophecy is a message from God, the words we use are often our words. And Paul has already said in 1 Corinthians that prophecy is only prophecy in part, and that one day prophecies will cease. The early church had a lot of problems with false prophets, but that didn't mean the church came to an end. So if our prophecy isn't exactly from God, we don't need to worry too much, as I say, as long as we're not doing it to hurt anyone. And there are times when somebody might come and bring you a personal word of prophecy. And I think the good news about weighing it up is that we don't have to accept it's from God. It's up to us to decide that. Somebody's brought us the message, we decide whether it really is from God. And it might be that we believe that the word is from God, but how we understand that word may be slightly different from the person giving it to us. They might be saying, well, this clearly means this. And you think, well, no, I accept that's a word from God, but I don't think that. Paul himself was told that he was going to be, if he went up to Jerusalem, he'd be bound by the Jewish leaders. And lots of people around said, well, that means you shouldn't go. And he said, no, it doesn't mean that. It's just God telling me that. I'm willing to go and to die. So that's one area that we might get worried about if we get it wrong. Another area is the fear of losing control of ourselves. And Paul deals with this, I think, in quite a lot of detail. If we receive a word of prophecy, it doesn't mean that we lose control of our ability to speak, that God somehow becomes the words coming out of our mouth. He doesn't take control over our mouth. You have to decide, I have to decide, when and whether to pass on the prophecy. That's why he says if a revelation comes, another revelation comes, the first one speaking needs to sit down. You don't have to keep going. Nothing's making you. You're in control of your mouth. The message is inspired by God and it comes spontaneously, but you speak the words. And that puts some responsibility on us to speak them out. But if you are concerned about losing control, it means you don't have to. So, very quick run through that. I think the main conclusions we can get from this passage are that while we're not all prophets, we may all prophesy. That is, some people will regularly receive and pass on messages from God to strengthen, to encourage, to comfort, to edify, and to instruct both individuals and groups in love. But we can all ask for and therefore expect to receive the gift of prophecy, that sudden thought, that feeling, that inspiration, that Bible verse that comes to you from God, which you believe you need to pass on to someone else. And in this way, we become a conduit or a herald between God and others, both believers and unbelievers, passing on his messages to them.